is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for October 21st, 2016. And we've got another good show for you today, another one about the election coming up. Today we'll be talking about the Rogue River District 35 school bond measure, measure 15167. And I will have later, I'll have an interview that Pastor Gigline did with the superintendent, Paul Young, and the business manager, Don Sweeney, and they'll be giving an overview of the measure. And then later in the show, I'll be interviewing, bringing back to the show, Rob Heilman, and he'll be here to promote the measure. I couldn't get anybody in that was against the measure, but I will talk a little bit about some of the possible opposition to a measure like this. And this is a measure that replaces the current bond is expiring, and so it doesn't represent a change in people's taxes. They'll remain at the level they were at, but it will allow this new bond to go through and allow them to do some new improvements. But we'll get into that in a little bit. Moving over to sports action for the high school for this past week. First in girls soccer on Wednesday, they went to Illinois Valley and lost a heartbreaker 1-0. And they will have they'll have another game coming up on Saturday. We'll get into the schedule later on in the show. In volleyball action, on Tuesday, the final match of the season for the volleyball team, they went to Lakeview and lost 3-1. And so their season is all over. They won't be advancing into the playoffs, and that was the final regular season contest for the volleyball team. In boys soccer, they won 4-0 on Wednesday. They hosted Illinois Valley, and I believe that takes their record to 9-2 now. They've got one game left on the schedule, and we'll get into that again later on in the show when I give the schedule for the teams for the upcoming week. And finally, right here on 94.3 The Bridge, we had football last Friday at Lost River, and that was a 41-12 loss for the Chieftains. And their next game will be tonight at Monroe. And we'll be covering that right here on 94.3 The Bridge. And also in some more sports news, Rogue River High School grad David Murphy got his first tournament win as a collegiate golfer. He went to the Walla Walla Invitational and shot a 68 on the final round to give him a -5 for the tournament, and that was enough to win the tournament. He golfs for OIT, and the team finished third, but congratulations to David Murphy for his first collegiate win. And that's it for the local news and local sports. So we want to get right into the subject of the day. And so I looked up a few things, and I have a few of my own thoughts. And like I said before, we couldn't get someone to come in that wanted to speak in opposition to the school bond measure. But this is obviously it replaces an existing bond, but it is an addition onto your property taxes. And I think some of the biggest opposition to a measure like this, you know, most people want to support schools, although there are, a percentage of people that don't think there should be public funding or local funding, I should say, for the schools. I happen to think there should be more local funding and more state funding, and I'm a proponent of eliminating federal funding and actually of eliminating the Department of Education at the national level. I think the states and the localities can do the job of educating the kids and deciding what the, you know, the right course of action should be and the right, you know, the right testing and all of that. I would like to see that level of government eliminated. But having said that, you know, talking about not wanting property taxes per se, is an, you know, it's an important issue. You know, one of the cornerstones of our republic and our, you know, unique form of government that that we started with our Constitution is the ability to have property rights and to actually own real property. And property taxes fly right in the face of that belief because, as you know, if you don't pay your property taxes, the county or whichever agency is collecting those taxes, you know, they can seize your property for not paying your taxes. Well, I mean, that completely eliminates your property rights. You really don't have property rights if you know, a government agency can just seize your property. And so that's one of the main arguments you hear for, you know, not having property taxes. As far as I'm concerned, the only time that it might be okay to have a tax on real property would be in the form of a capital gains tax when you sell the property. But when your property goes up in value, that really has no, you don't gain any advantage from that as long as you are owning the property. The only time you gain an advantage from the appreciation of a property is when you sell the property. So I, you know, I'm okay with a certain level of a capital gains tax, although, you know, that should be kept at a pretty low level, in my opinion, because, again, real property is something that you have paid for. Now, some would say it's an investment, and in a lot of cases, it is an investment, and maybe those things could be separated out, determining what's an investment property and what is just, and they do that. I mean, the federal government does that. They determine what level makes it, you know, too much appreciation and you have to pay capital gains on it. And, you know, there's all that gets really complex and I'm not going to get into that today, but that's really the only time I think a form of a property tax would be in order. And again, I don't think there should be any way for the government to seize property, you know, for non-payment of a tax. There can be other penalties, other ways to deal with that. But property rights, again, are such a cornerstone of our republic. I just don't, I'm just not a proponent of a property tax. You know, and in this current political environment, you know, at times it feels like almost a soft tyranny that we're in right now. And again, the property tax just becomes another lever that the government can use against you. So those are some of the general reasons people would be against a property tax, and they're legitimate reasons. And I'm gonna let, you know, Rob come in and tell us, you know, the reasons why we should vote for this measure. The one reason I'm going to give just as a, my personal reasoning is, and we may touch on this again in the interview, is that in the current climate, taxing climate of Oregon, we don't have a sales tax, so we can't tack on an additional, you know, 1% or 0.5% or something to the sales tax because we don't have one. And I think it's a horrible idea to add a local sales tax when there's not a statewide tax. And the reason for that is it really discourages people that can go, you know, one exit up the freeway to buy things. It discourages them from spending that money right here in the community. When there's already a sales tax for the state, and I would definitely be a proponent of that if you eliminated other forms of taxation, whether it be property taxes or income taxes. Of course, the state of California has all of the above. But I think the sales tax is a much fairer way to tax. And, you know, property taxes are, there's all kinds of reasons that I'm not a fan of those. But the biggest, you know, overlying one is that, you know, it is a direct assault on your property rights. But anyhow, the sales tax is not really a good way to collect the money that you would want to collect with this type of a bond measure, again, because we don't have a statewide tax. And so really with, you know, limited ways of collecting it and the way things are done in this state, that's the property tax is really the only realistic way to go about it, because you're not going to affect change statewide by doing something at the local level. A tiny town like Rogue River is not going to have any influence over the state. So in the current climate of taxation, it's just the best way to do it. It's not ideal, but if you support local funding for schools, this is about the only way to do it. But again, I'm going to leave any more of my thoughts about this out until we have Rob here to kind of promote the measure. So I'm going to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll hear the interview with Superintendent Paul Young and Business Manager Don Sweeney, and then we'll have the interview with Rob Heilman. You're listening to Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
All right. In studio with me is Superintendent Paul Young and Don Sweeney, Business Director for the Rogue River School District. Welcome you both to the studios here. I want to read what ballot measure 15-167 says and then ask you guys some questions about it. It says that shall Rogue River School District improve facilities by issuing $3.3 million in bonds and potentially receive additional $3.3 billion in a state grant. If bonds are approved, they will be payable to taxes on property and property ownership. So what hangs in the balance here is not $3.3 in the bond, but really $6.6 million because there's a grant that follows if you get it. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no. Okay. It's a grant that follows it that we hope to get, and it's not an absolute sure thing, but we have a pretty fair chance at it. The state has matching funds, so if we actually take the 3.3, we have a pretty fair chance of getting another 3.3 from the state.
Okay. Now, where does that grant come from? You said from the state, but specifically...
Don,
okay,
you take
so
this.
Essentially, the state of Oregon sold some bonds for improvement of school facilities, and they're dividing it up over this biennium. And then so a portion of it is for these elections. Right now, it's about $40 million that will be divided amongst school districts based on whether or not they pass their bonds. So essentially, if we pass a bond and we're currently on a wait list, for our portion, and we're approved, we would receive the money. If we don't pass the bond, we won't receive any money, of course. And even if we do pass the bond, there is a possibility that we might not receive any money.
Okay. Will property owners in the school district see their taxes go up if this passes?
Well, you can't promise that the taxes won't go up, but the bond will not increase the amount that they would have paid. What it does is it extends the time that we will be receiving money for a bond instead of raising the amount.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, if Rogue River School District gets the bond, what do they hope to do with the money?
Okay, actually, Don, I'm going to let you go through that because that you were primarily responsible for some of the work that we did to mine that information.
Okay, so the primary thing, the first on the list would be the HVAC system at all of the school, out of all the schools, and also adding air conditioning to the elementary in the areas that it does not have air conditioning. Our HVAC system is really old, so it's in either need of repair or essentially there's places that don't have it. So that's kind of the first thing. That could eat up as much as $2.5 to $3 million of the $3 million that's passed, depending on how much it all costs in the end. The rest, okay.
Are we replacing systems in all the schools?
It would depend. So, okay. For example, at the elementary East Campus, there is no air conditioning. So that would be a complete replace. That would be an HVAC for both heat and cooling. At Elementary West, there's a portion of the building that has air conditioning and heat in it, so there would be no replacement there. It would be in the center is where we would put the replacement for the heating and cooling, because the outside part is newer, and that is functioning properly. So it just depends on the sections. At the high school, the main problem seems to be the controls of the current system that we have, and the controls are not like your home where you go out and buy a $79 thermostat. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in controls that don't seem to be functioning properly. It'll turn the heat on a day that it's 90 degrees, and it will not air condition some spaces while it's 85 degrees, or it'll be 85 degrees in one room and 60 degrees in another room because the system is not moving the air around properly. It's heating or cooling, but it's just not properly distributing. So that's the things that it'll look to fix.
Okay, good. So after HVAC, what's next?
After HVAC, then it would go to probably some asbestos removal. And whenever I talk about asbestos removal, it's not that we have any friable asbestos. That is the type of asbestos that would fall or rain from the ceilings. Our asbestos is in items like floor tiles that have been glued down, and so the asbestos is still there, and it's only an issue when we go to work on the building, but we would like to get as much of that out as we can. We estimate a few $100,000, and we'll have virtually all of the asbestos out of the building. So I don't want to say it'll be 100% because then something will inevitably that we didn't know was there was end up biting us. But that would be the next thing. And then the following thing would be American with Disabilities Act, working on getting our schools compliant for people with wheelchairs. Just whatever needs to be done there. If it's ramps up to a second level, getting our bathrooms fully compliant, making sure our parking lot is not a hazard for those people. There's numerous things that would fall under.
Okay. I'm not sure if this decision has been made yet, but suppose the voters grant the bond, but the grant, you don't receive the grant. How would that money be used?
Well, in any case, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go out and get some solid bids on the work that we're going to be doing. We've worked with an engineering firm to find out what it should cost, but we haven't actually got bids from people who will do the work yet. And once we've got those bids, then the board will be having some public work sessions where they will be deciding, okay, here's our shopping list, here's the cost of the groceries, what are we actually going to have on the menu?
Okay, good. Was there anything that I missed that I failed to ask?
If the other item that is out there is if we were to receive the matching funds from the state, we would work on a single point entry system for the schools, which is about safety. As anybody who has visited our schools knows that you can pretty much walk in from any angle, but we would like to set up a system where we can put some fences around, put the doors in the proper place so anybody who enters the building has to be greeted by a school employee, making proper vestibules then to allow people in after we've kind of already met them and looked at them and see who they are.
Oh, good.
That's a major thing.
And projections of accomplishing that are through, you mentioned some fencing and things.
There's a lot to be done to make all three campuses fully single entry compliant, so that's not going to happen. It would cost about $9 million to get everything single entry compliant. I mean, our buildings are built from the early 1900s to 1975, and that wasn't an issue 40 years ago. So essentially there would be some changing of the buildings, maybe putting up a small building over on Elementary East to kind of make up a horseshoe-shaped design, and then some fences. But once again, this is all about community involvement and having work sessions with the board and having people say, you know, we don't like that design. Even though just because the money is there, there still needs to be that community involvement as to how it will be spent.
Okay. And what hardship would it present if the school district does not get the bond from the voters this year? What what position would that place the school district in?
Well, we would be in the position that we have been in, I suppose, this last year as we came into the summer. The weather got so hot that we actually had to rent some heavy cooling, temporary cooling equipment from Portland and have it brought down on a truck because that we weren't able to do regular education with the students due to the heat. In the winter, we have rooms that are the right temperature, but we have other rooms that are not the right temperature. We can't, the system doesn't keep the whole building balanced right now. So you're basically, you're hotter as you go toward the boilers and you're colder as you go away from the boilers. And all of those things just have an influence on how much the kids are paying attention to what they're supposed to be learning and how much they're paying attention to tugging on their coats.
Mm-hmm. Very good. We've been talking with Superintendent Paul Young and Don Sweeney, who's a business director or business manager.
Yep.
Business manager for the Rogue River School District. Thank you both for taking the time to come in.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. We'll start with Major League Baseball playoff action and the Cleveland Indians. They are four wins away from giving the city its second title in 4 months after the Cavaliers, if you recall, won the NBA Finals in the spring. The Indians captured their first American League pennant since 1997 last night, blanking the Toronto Blue Jays for the second time in the AL Championship Series. Rookie Ryan Merritt combined with three relievers on a six-hitter as Cleveland posted a 3-0 shutout in Game 5 at Toronto. The Indians will face either the Chicago Cubs or LA Dodgers as they try and win their first World Series crown since 1948. The NLCS is tied at 2 games each. Chicago evened the series Wednesday with a 10-2 drubbing of the Dodgers in Los Angeles. The Cubs had gone 21 consecutive scoreless innings before erupting for 4 runs in the top of the fourth. Game 5 will be in Los Angeles, and they're playing it tonight. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And now joining me in the studio, as promised, from the school board and the booster club, incidentally, is Mr. Rob Heilman. Welcome back to Rogue Talk.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So before we got to your interview here, I gave some of the general complaints people have about property taxes in general, and in some cases about local funding for schools. Some people are opposed to that. I'm not sure why, but since I couldn't get anybody in here that wanted to talk about opposition to the bond measure, I did my best to kind of lay that out. And then the listeners got to hear the interview with Paul Young and Don Sweeney spelling out what is in this measure. So now let's get to the side of promoting it, and that's what you're here for. Why is this bond measure important to the school district?
Sure. Well, being on the school board now for 6 years, you know, I've really got a close eye and look at what the school is deficient in. And for many years, being a newbie to Rogue River, it's I mean, the facilities are in major need of an overhaul. I mean, you even go back to like Evans Valley and you look at each facility and how long it's been there. Every school district needs upgrades. Every building, your home needs upgrades. And with poor funding and the problems the district has with enrollment dropping, the funding to keep up with the proper maintenance that should happen every year has been a challenge. So there's no question that a lot of things were let go over the decades that the school district just couldn't keep up with. And so now we've got buildings that in many cases don't even have the basic functions that you would want for your kids. You know, an HVAC system, for example. I mean, my two little girls are in the elementary school on the East Campus. And in the summertime, as it gets close to summer or right when school comes back in, I mean, they're roasting in those facilities because there's no air conditioning. And then the heat, you know, the heat's a struggle as it gets colder. They've got various heating options, a boiler, and a lot of that just is so old, it doesn't function properly. So even your basic stuff, it's we need to get a lot of these buildings back up to what would be standard today, so that it's more functional for our kids, more functional for the teachers that are they're spending so much effort in working with the kids.
Yeah, and I don't remember who made the statement, but in Pastor Gigline's interview, I know they mentioned that in one of the schools, you know, the system doesn't even work evenly. You know, you get classrooms that get way too hot, and other ones that don't get enough. And right. I mean, that's obviously, you know, a huge issue. So one of the things I talked about in my, I'm not opposed to this, but in my playing devil's advocate about this type of measure would be the general idea that property taxes really, I think, are a lousy tax. And actually, I wasn't playing devil's advocate in that respect, because I don't like property taxes. I think they're a horrible form of taxation. But the point that I was making is we don't have other avenues in Oregon currently for this sort of a bond measure. It really almost has to go on property taxes. What's your feeling about that?
You're exactly right. I mean, the problem for Oregon is the way they have the tax structure set up is you get your certain state funding and federal funding for various specific programs. Now, ideally, districts are building maintenance and upkeep into their budget, but as state funding changes, you know, federal funding changes, doesn't matter what district you're in, you know, school district you're in, it that fluctuates, and so it's tough for a lot of districts to keep up with that, and that's why you start to see buildings start to have issues. And so for Oregon, that's a way for the school to have some control over what they're doing and what they're going after. And the bond allows them to say, okay, these are specific projects that we need to tackle that our normal state and federal funding just doesn't allow us to do. And so they can take on bigger projects. I mean, anything that they designated, they have to designate it before they put it on, you know, for the vote, for the election. But they can use that to really do the big picture stuff. And so property taxes are never fun. Oregon, unfortunately, it has a lot of great things about it. But, you know, their tax structure is very different than other states. And so that's one of the ways that school districts can approach the public and the community to try to support their big picture needs that they can't get through the normal regular funding.
Yeah, and the point, you know, that I made is even though I don't think property taxes are the right way to do it, we're not going to change that here at the local level. Little tiny Rogue River is not going to affect the state mm-hmm. in the way they tax. I would prefer a sales tax and get rid of some of the, you know, either property taxes or income tax.
Right.
Of course, a state like California, they've got all three. So,
mm-hmm. right.
But we're not gonna make that kind of change from the local level. So we have to work within the system of property taxes is really the place to put this, unfortunately, but that's exactly the way it is. Now, I don't know. I had a question about this. Does this go just to city people that live in the city, or does this go district wide, or how does it structured so that the people that are getting the benefit from it are paying for it?
It's district. So you've got your city limits, you've got your county limits, but the school district has very set lines that oftentimes go over your city limits. So, you know, for example, Rogue River has the Weimer community that is a part of the school district. There are also residents, kids that go to Rogue River schools, but they're actually officially live in Gold Hill. So a bond measure like this actually goes to the school district lines. You know, it's not a countywide thing, so people in Medford aren't voting on it. It's really more a measure for within the district boundaries. And so anybody that's within those boundaries makes that decision, and of course, that affects their taxes.
Okay. Now, what would you say, and I've heard this before in these kinds of taxes, you know, you'll hear people that say, well, I don't have any kids. Why should I pay for schools? What would be your answer to that?
Well, it's a community. To me, it's a community piece. You know, it doesn't matter what city you live in. You need to have a holistic approach to your community. And what I mean by holistic in this case is there are segments where you're supporting each other. You want a good community. You've got to support everything from your kids, your youth, your schools, to the business community and the city, you've also got to support your seniors. So it's a complete picture that you need to have a healthy community that sticks together and is going to bring in people versus turn them away. And so if you don't do the things, even if you don't have a child, you don't have a grandchild, and you know, say you vote against this, then it'll continue to make the schools less appealing. You know, it's one of the many factors that could be a decision for parents that are looking to move to Rogue River. Well, you know, the schools just they don't look very good, or they don't even have air conditioning, or they're not very safe because of this. You know, and that's a decision that parents would make. Well, these may be great community people. These are people that may bring in a business that you know, anybody that doesn't have kids may love. So it's more of a 10,000 foot view that I would promote people taking. Even if you don't have kids, you don't have grandkids in the school district, it's going to support a lot more than just that. It's going to support the whole community. And that doesn't even talk about how many things that go on at the schools that are not really based on the school. It's community. Maybe they come in and do a presentation. Maybe they're doing, a movie night. You know, any number of things that the community could do that has nothing to do with the school. And the whole community would hopefully reap the benefits of, you know, a bond measure like this improving the facilities.
Yeah. Well, and even, you know, like PTA events, mm-hmm. they're not school events per se. They involve the school children, but they're kind of an extracurricular type thing. And so you need the schools to have that kind of support. You need to have a good, clean, safe building for them to do those things in. And, you know, you hear those complaints about, oh, the kids don't have things to do and whatever. Well, if the funding to the schools is not what it needs to be, you're going to have even less of those activities going on. And so those things that you hear the complaints about, those kids are going to be out on the street doing things because there's no activities for them because the school doesn't have the money to allow those activities to go on. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. And so I mentioned the PTA. I understand you know a little bit about that.
A little bit.
The PTA is obviously, they're in favor of this. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, they're in favor of it. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah,
they've obviously, it's a great group of parents that do fantastic work at the elementary school and beyond. And they're a group that can support this publicly. And so they were a kind of a natural group to you know, kind of spearhead a lot of what's being put out there now. In fact, they just started putting out a bunch of great signs around town in support of the measure. I know they're doing a dinner, I think it's next Wednesday, on the 20th, out at the high school, just to support and answer questions about, you know, address concerns that may be in the community about the bond.
Yeah, and I think I did see that flyer come up on Facebook today, so I'll try and remember to put that out through the Rogue Talk page so that we can promote that, because definitely want to support PTA, and obviously they support this measure too. Another thing I thought about, and I wonder what your opinion on this would be, I remember back to one of the times where the teachers union was at an impasse with the school trying to iron out a contract. And one of the sticking points for the union was the school was holding back a higher percentage of funds than what they thought was appropriate. Now, my opinion on that was I applaud the district for doing that, because in such a small district, as you kind of mentioned, with the when you're levels decline, the number of students is declining, of course your funding also declines.
Right.
And I thought it was smart of them to hold back higher than what maybe the average was, because we're such a small district. So how would continuing with a bond like this, this bond is replacing an old bond that's about to expire. Mm-hmm. How does that also help keep the funding, allow them to keep their budget? Does it allow them to keep their budget where they need it to be? Does this give them a little more breathing room?
Absolutely. In a big picture manner, it does. Because what's the alternative? Let's say the community votes no, votes against the bond. Then, you know, the school district then has to keep chipping away at these maintenance issues, these big picture issues, facility issues that have been here for a long time. So that has to be written in the budget. And so it's less money at the end of the year. It's less money that we can put towards other programs, less money we can put towards teachers. I mean, any number of things. It's got to come from somewhere. So that's the alternative if the community doesn't want this bond to pass. And so it does affect the budget in a lot of ways. And if it does pass, this takes care of a lot of the big picture issues. If we're lucky enough to get the matching piece as well, there's more that we can tackle on top of that. And the nice thing is it just builds on itself. So we tackle these and these are sustainable for 30 to 50 years. But that also gives the district, the administration, breathing room to say, okay, great. We maybe didn't need as much on our maintenance budget this year to tackle some of these smaller, chip away at the big ice block. Now we can put some of that towards, you know, a new program, new instruments, new sports equipment. I mean, so they've got capabilities to then put towards some other priorities that are in the buildings, you know, day to day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I look back to when the district made the decision to close the school out in Weimar. Maintenance was a huge issue in that decision. There were so many things that needed major overhaul in that school. Right. And with the declining enrollment, there was a lot of contention about that, of course. And I won't get back and rehash that. But to be quite frank, the financial part of it was the biggest driving factor in having to close that school. And so if you lose a measure like this that helps keep those keeps those maintenance issues taken care of that are some of them are, like you said, some of these things, they just aren't hardly working at all and or didn't exist to begin with. You know, I guess the elementary school has never had any kind of air conditioning at all. And
correct.
I mean, in our climate, at least in the 15 years I've lived here, I won't drive a car without air conditioning. I don't want the kids to have to go to school without it either. And, you know, maybe it's a first world problem, but that's where we live. So,
right.
You know, it's a reality. And
well, the other thing, if I can say as well, I mean, back to the community piece is it makes us less competitive. And for me, being on the school board, a lot of times that's how I view my role and what I'm deciding on. And my area of focus for the school board is treat it like a business. You know, you want the parents and the kids are your customers, kids and parents are your customers. If we're not taking care of them, somebody else will. You know, somebody else will be more appealing. And that ties exactly to that commentary, which is, it's a first world problem, sure, in a lot of these cases, but there are true safety issues with asbestos, comfort issues for the kids and the teachers. But you know what? If grants pass, if Gold Hill, Crater, you know, some of the Christian schools, if they're going to have these comforts and luxuries and not charge anything more, that's kind of, you look at that like a business and you're going to lose some kids to even things like that. And so that's important.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure that they mentioned it in the interview and I probably missed it, but I think this also covers some of the ADA issues too, the, handicap requirements for the state, or I don't
correct.
Know if they're state or federal, but you know, those are important to get taken care of too. And
right.
If we have to spend, if we don't have the bond measure and we have to spend the monies, because those things have to get done if they're mandated by the state or by the federal government,
right.
That takes even more money away from what should be going toward, you know, things that are helping the school itself. Not that those aren't important. They are important, but the more things you have to spend on regulatory issues, the less you have to spend on the kids.
Right.
And I'm usually one that kind of bristles when I hear this. It's about the kids. I'm against Measure 97, and I don't buy into their little argument about, you know, it's about the children, because I hear that
right.
all the time. But in this case, this is our local school, and this money goes directly to making sure our schools are a good environment for the kids. And, you know, another thing you mentioned, the community, part of that community, of course, is the school. And I think of within the school, retaining teachers also. You know, we see a lot of we see a lot of turnover with the teachers, and I value the good teachers we have. And I don't want to leave anybody out, so I'm just going to mention one name, but Mrs. Gibson at the high school has been there a long time now, very dedicated teacher. We need to
right.
keep more teachers like her. If the schools are not looking attractive to the students, that may want to go outside the district, you know, it's impossible to retain good teachers even because you just don't have the funding to keep them here.
Exactly. There are many aspects to that. I mean, we talked about the kids. Now, you're exactly right. Teachers fall in the same boat where we've done a lot at the district level to make it more appealing to teachers, you know, continuing education. We just worked on their funding from, you know, from the union standpoint, and so we're competitive pay-wise, but there are always intangibles when you talk about employment. And, you know, do you have the nice, fancy new digs and equipment, and especially for teachers, technology? You know, that's a big thing these days. And, you know, none of this would go towards technology, but again, if we're not supplying them the basics of what they would want, somebody would want in their own work environment, it's going to be very hard to keep them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned it's not, you know, directly for like technology, for instance, but again, you get into that robbing Peter to pay Paul thing. If you're having to use other funds to do the things that this bond will do, then you don't have those funds to do things like technology or like retaining good teachers.
Right.
And I do think we've done a better job recently of making it more attractive to be in this district. We're starting to be competitive enough to attract, you know, some better teachers. And
absolutely,
you know, and that's always a good thing. And again, I wasn't going to get into a list. That's why I just mentioned I just mentioned one name. And
yeah, I love Gibson. She's great.
Yeah, and I'm not leaving anybody out there. Yeah. We have plenty of good, very excellent, dedicated teachers. But she was just the first example because I've known her the longest.
Right.
And I admire, you know, her dedication to trying to prepare these kids when they leave school. I hear too much of this, you know, this kind of get them to graduation attitude, and I just don't agree with that. We need to get them prepared for what's after graduation.
Right.
And, you know, she does a great job of that. So that, a little bit of a tangent there, but that was, I'm not trying to leave anybody out, but if I start listing people, then I will leave people out.
Yeah, you need the whole directory.
But she was just a good example. So salute to you, Kelly Gibson.
Right.
But so is there anything else about the measure that I've missed or that you wanted to talk about, or did we get it all covered?
No, I absolutely think it's an important thing for the Rogue River School District to pass. You know, I think it's been long overdue. Really back before I moved here. I know that we are just coming to the end of a bond, and that's why we're talking about this now. But I think the district is in a really good place. You know, we've talked about some of those points here, and there's been so much improvement in the last couple of years, and teacher retention, facilities, curriculum, kids. I mean, we're right on the cusp of really, you know, our enrollment is for the first year going to increase significantly. You know, we've got great kids coming in and just such a fun energy, and now we need the facilities to catch up. And for me, you've probably hit on a lot of these points in some of the other, you know, conversations, but it's really about the basics. You know, I want the community to really understand that we're not going after the big shiny ball. It's, you know, if I had my druthers, you know, as a coach, I'd be going after all kinds of fun athletic stuff, but that's not what this is about. We surveyed the community. We paid good money for a really nice survey that gave us a bunch of details about what the community would support. And it's on a lot of the basics, you know, the air conditioning, you know, HVAC systems, the safety measures, asbestos, ADA compliance, electrical. I mean, just huge electrical improvements that are long overdue to bring us up to new standards to make it match with everything else. You know, safety, you've probably touched on safety as well, but especially if we get the matching grant, there's so many safety components that we need to do to make our facilities safe to, you know, today's world, which is very dangerous. And so there are a lot of things that we need to continue to work on. And so I'm very supportive of this. It's a hugely important thing. And the other thing is, we spent a lot of time at the school board level and with the administration talking about, well, you know, it's a new time. It's a new energy. What do we ask the community for? And I mentioned the survey, but beyond that, we made some decisions that, look, let's get our feet under us. Let's get what we absolutely need to make it competitive, make it comfortable for the community and for the kids. And so we didn't increase the bond request. I mean, so we're hopeful that, you know, as we go through this process and if the community agrees to it, nobody will see a change in their yearly taxes. And we wanted to be very mindful of that so that it's hopefully is much easier to support. We do the work where they continue to see the improvements, and then we work. Keep working on the master plan as we go.
Yeah, and that's an important point. It just replaces the existing bond that is expiring, so your taxes aren't going up. I know Correct. That's not an excuse to vote for it, but really, Right. it is an important thing to consider. Is your taxes aren't going to change; they're going to continue to be the same. It's just a renewal. It's going to pay for some new stuff. This is all the time we're going to have left in this segment. I want to thank you again, Rob, for coming in.
Thank you.
I'm supporting the measure. I think I've made that pretty clear. Rob supports the measure, and I just think it's a good idea to keep the schools with the most funding we can give them. And the only thing I can tell you is if you have any other questions, you could contact the district. They don't promote it or they don't take sides on it. They'll just give you information on it, but you can talk to them about precisely what this is going to be spent on if you're unclear on that. But I think they covered that pretty well in the interview with Pastor Gigline. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with the Rogue Talk mascot. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The Pentagon has identified the American killed in Iraq yesterday as a 34-year-old Navy Chief Petty Officer named Jason C. Finan. The California resident was assigned to Explosive Ordnance Disposal Mobile Unit 3. He died of wounds sustained in a roadside bomb attack north of Mosul. He was part of a U.S. team advising and assisting Iraqi Kurd fighters known as Peshmerga. His death was the fourth combat death in Iraq since U.S. military operations against the Islamic State began in Iraq in August 2014. Police in Minneapolis say two officers involved in the fatal shooting of a black man last November won't face discipline. Chief Janie Hartaux announced the result of an internal review today. The investigation stemmed from the death of 24-year-old Jamar Clark during a confrontation with two white police officers. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 17 points, the NASDAQ rose 16. More details at SRN.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
With an SRN News business brief, I'm Jeremy House. The Federal Reserve says U.S. economic growth accelerated slightly during the third quarter. The acceleration was supported by modest hiring, an uptick in consumer spending, and steady home building. T-Mobile, the country's number three wireless carrier, will pay $48 million for not clearly telling customers how unlimited data plans weren't really unlimited. The Federal Communications Commission says T-Mobile had a policy to slow down the speeds of customers who were the heaviest data users, but the company didn't let customers know how much data used would trigger the lower speed. The Obama administration has set its goal for the president's final health care sign-up season. Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell says she expects 13.8 million people to sign up. On Wall Street Wednesday, the Dow climbed over 40 points to close at 18,202. With business, I'm Jeremy House.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. Joining me in the studio once again is the Rogue Talk mascot, Cameron. How you doing, Cameron?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, we're going to jump into the sports schedule, and then we'll get to your football picks. That sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So, upcoming games for the Chieftains. Saturday at 10 a.m., girls soccer will be hosting Cascade Christian, and that game will be followed by the boys hosting St. Mary's at 1 o'clock. So does that sound right? Both playing at Beck Field on Saturday, Cameron?
Yep.
So get on out and support those Chieftains. We got a couple of good Chieftain soccer teams, especially the boys team doing really well, but they're both really good teams this year, and it'd be fun to watch. So girls at 10 a.m. and then the boys at 1 o'clock. And then as we mentioned before, volleyball's done for the year. And then, so that leaves football. They'll play tonight at Monroe High School. That game will kick off at 7 o'clock, and right here on 94.3 The Bridge, we'll be on the air at 6:50. So join me and my partner Bill Winter for Chieftain football tonight. And now let's move to Cameron's football picks. Last week was not your best week, but not too bad. You went 2-2, and that takes your record to 12-9-1. And looks like picking that one pro game didn't pay off for you, Cameron.
No, it didn't. I really thought Green Bay was better, but...
Yeah, I was worried about the way Dak Prescott's been playing, that Dallas would have a pretty good showing, and well, we saw that they did. So 2-2 record there. So let's move on to this week's games. I read last week's record. So you're now at after the 2-2 week, you're at 14-11-1. And number 6 Texas A&M is traveling to number 1 Alabama. Bama is favored by 19.5 points. So who do you have in A&M versus Alabama?
I got to go with Alabama.
Alabama going to cover 19.5 points.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M's offense is going to do very well against that strong defense. The Crimson Tide.
Yeah, you may be right, but that's almost 3 touchdowns. So we'll have to see how that one turns out. But Bama at home, that's going to be a tough one for A&M. So the next game we'll pick, number 23, Ole Miss at number 25, LSU. LSU is a 6.5-point favorite. Who do you got?
I'm going to go with Ole Miss. The LSU hasn't played that great this year. And they got a new coach because their coach got fired. So with their interim coach, you know, you can't tell how good he is. So I'm going to go with Ole Miss.
Okay, so Ole Miss in that one. So let's move to the next one. Number 17, Arkansas, traveling to number 21, Auburn. Auburn, a 10-point favorite, even though in ranking-wise they would be the underdog, but they're favored by 10 in this one. Who do you got in Arkansas versus Auburn?
I'm going to go with Auburn. I think Auburn has a pretty good team. They haven't, you know, their record has been a little shaky this year, but I think Arkansas hasn't played that well last two games, and I think Auburn can get the 10 points and win it.
Yeah, and you may be right. That's another, much like Alabama, Auburn is a lot tougher team at home. You know, it's tough to go in there and win at Auburn. So the next game will be NC State at number 7, Louisville. Louisville, a 19.5-point favorite. So just like the Alabama game, 19.5 points. So who do you got in that one?
NC State. I think when Louisville played Clemson, Clemson barely beat Louisville, and Clemson barely beat NC State, just barely. And I think NC State will pull off the upset.
Well, and with that 19.5-point spread, even if they don't win it, Louisville's going to have to win by a lot for you to lose that bet. So I think that's a pretty good one. But you're right. I've actually been pretty impressed with NC State. They've looked pretty good this year. So our final game we'll pick, number 19, Utah, traveling to UCLA. UCLA favored by 7 in this one. Who do you got in that game?
I got UCLA. I think the way they played against Stanford and how they gave Stanford a game, now Stanford hasn't been playing that well, but the way they gave Stanford that game, I think Utah really isn't that great of a team, and I think UCLA will win.
All right. Well, I'm gonna borrow that dollar that you owed to Pastor Gigline, and I'm gonna bet you in that game. I'll take Utah in that one. We'll see how that works out. So that's it for our sports picks, and that's gonna be it for our show today. We thank you for joining us here on Rogue Talk, and a special thank you to Pastor Gigline for letting me use that interview and with the superintendent and the business manager there. And thanks again to Rob Heilman for coming in today. And so once again, be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.